Angus Young, how you doing?
Good, Becca.
The Offspring.
How's it going, Becca?
Dave Grohl, how you going, mate?
Good, man.
Pete, it's been a long time coming.
Oh, Becca, hasn't it indeed?
We go inside the dressing room, speak to the biggest names in music.
Keith Richards, the Rolling Stones.
And crack open their esky.
This is exactly how I imagined you, by the way, sitting opposite me with a vodka and orange.
You're a discerning chap.
This is The Rider.
Hey, this is Becca. Welcome back to The Rider. Another Splendor weekend done and dusted. And of course, by the way, if you're going to Splendor and you're not taking your gumboots, you are clearly mad, because every single year we see the rain, we see the mud, but this has got to go down as history as being the muddiest Splendor of all time. But seriously, bring your gumboots. Day one was cancelled. The promoters did all they could to make it happen, but unfortunately the Gorillaz weren't able to hit the stage along with Baker Boy and DMAs, but they did do a pop-up show down the road at the Beach Hotel, so that was a real scene on day one. And of course, the rest of the weekend, a massive success. The Strokes hitting the stage Saturday night, Violent Soho, and of course, Sunday night, Liam Gallagher with Tyler, the Creator, and a huge weekend. Not a great weekend if you're waiting for buses, but that's kind of normally the go when it comes to Splendor in the Grass. So that is done for another year. Next year, remember to bring your gumboots. Now, this week on the podcast, I know. Ian Hogg from Powderfinger.
It definitely was an empty feeling, because it becomes part of your identity after, I don't know, how long did we do that for? We did definitely over 20 years we were together. It's like, how many people stay in their same job for 20 years? It's like not that many. Really.
Not many. So yeah. They're going to hear from Hoggy about what he's been up to since leaving Powderfinger. Yeah, the empty feeling. He went out and got a real job. And what did he do when he left Powderfinger? Well, of course, he set up a studio and made some more music. So, Powderfinger to his new band, looking up to his musical idols, The Church. Ian Hogg, new member of The Church. Well, I mean, he's been a member for quite some time now. He joined in 2013. Straight after Powderfinger, they're about to come out with their 26th album, The Hypnagogue, and of course they've got their tour happening right around the country, and I'm waiting for his Zoom screen to light up, and it's here, there he is, Ian Hogg, how are you?
I'm well, thanks for having me.
Hey, it must be exciting, you know, coming off the US tour, once again, another big tour for The Church. I saw the massive crowds for the festival you were doing. Was it Cruel World?
It was called Cruel World, yeah, it's... I don't know. I want that whole thing to come to Australia. It was such an amazing bill, like with lots of bands from my youth and some good fresh new ones as well. But yeah, it was good format.
That's the great festival to have your artist pass for. You know, you can just sort of go side to stage and watch. You know, I think it was Blondie. Was it Psychedelic Furs on that one as well? I mean, you know.
Blondie and Psychedelic Furs. I mean, we've done a few tours with the Psychedelic Furs, so they're friends of ours now. And so that was great to see them at a big festival. But like Bauhaus and Devo and I don't know who else was there. Public Image.
Oh, great! Yeah.
Yeah, Morrissey. Yeah, it was lots of different stuff. It was good.
Yeah, I had a few friends who were there, and they were just amazed at the lineup it was. So where are you living right now? You're still sort of in the Brizzy hinterland. Is that where you are?
Yeah, I'm sitting here in Samford, just out of Samford actually. It's called Camp Mountain. I've been here for a long time now. It's I always say the only thing missing is the beach. It's pretty much an amazing place. But yeah, sadly, it's an hour drive to the beach.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a great part of town though, like, because you do literally feel like you're well and truly out of it. But you're close enough to Brisbane to go in and do stuff and play gigs and whatever.
Oh, yeah, of course. It's only if you're not driving with the traffic, it's only a 20-minute drive. So yeah.
Oh, that's fine. How good's Brisbane for that? So
not many cities you can do that.
No. That's pretty good studio you got behind you, by the way. Do you do much recording there, or is it mostly demoing? You do.
This is actually my lounge room. The studio is up there on the top of the hill. So this is just got some things that I tinker with here. But yeah. The studio has been going as long as I've lived here, and it's good. There are lots of people have pretty much every Brisbane band's been here, I think. And The Church have done stuff here. Powderfinger used to do stuff here. We recorded the Predators record here. It's good. I feel quite at home.
Yeah, and it's just nice to not be rushed as well. Like some bands do need the deadline of having to record something and have it back to the record company within so many days or so many weeks. But there's something also nice about having your own space and being able to do it in your own time.
Yeah, that's right.
You joined 2013, the church. Are you still the new guy?
I'll always be the new guy in my mind. But so next year is 10 years, which is insane. But I actually, on that tour, when Tim didn't come overseas to do those gigs because he just had a knee operation, I was the longest-serving member apart from Steve. So,
yeah. Wow.
Tables have turned.
Who would have thought? Well, I mean, you must be like, you know, recording with your idols because, you know, all the bands coming through, you know, I guess the early 90s era and late 90s, you would have looked up to bands like The Church and, you know, the Go-Betweens.
Even pre that, when I was in high school in the 80s, you know, I had The Church written on my pencil case. So it's quite surreal. I think Starfish came out the year I finished high school. So, yeah, it's definitely surreal.
Yeah,
it's kind of a teenage boy's dream come true, really.
Oh, it would be because they always say the albums that came out when you're 16, 17, 18, that they define your music taste for the rest of your life pretty much. So
I'd go with that, yeah.
Yeah. And what was it like? Did you have to audition or did you get the call up? How did it work out?
I guess there was sort of a informal audition. They needed someone because Marty had gone to do his own thing and someone, a friend of Steve's, like he wanted to continue and a friend of Steve's suggested me and he just thought, oh, what a great idea. And within sort of a couple of weeks of him making a phone call to me and asking if I'd be up for it, and I said, yeah, of course, then they came up here to Brisbane to this studio here and we just started writing songs for what ended up being a record called Further Deeper. So it was sort of, I mean, I didn't want to join and it just feel like I was in a covers band. So it was great to be creating new stuff. Yeah. So this is the record we're making now is the third one, it's finished actually. It's just being mixed, but it's the third one I've done with them. So
wow. Yeah. Oh, congrats, mate, because it's a real sort of dream. So Hypnagogue, that's coming out later on this year, I'm guessing. It's your 26th album for The Church and you're third in the band.
That's right.
Is it a collaborative thing or who takes the lead?
No, it's totally collaborative. So the guitarists tend to start a lot of the jams, I guess. So, yeah, I was, you know, starting a lot of the – I think you go in with sort of no preconceived ideas, but you've got sort of framework or sketches for little ideas that you might start playing and everyone joins in. And so when we did the sessions for what ended up as this album was in Gosford, sort of when the fires were going through Sydney, actually. So it was pre-COVID and it was sort of pre-floods. It was when there was fires. I don't know. It's all been pretty biblical. And
it has, yeah.
And so we were in there for 2 weeks, I think, and then we did a couple of sort of little extra sessions to add stuff. But yeah, everyone, it's totally collaborative. And then Steve writes 98% of the lyrics. Every now and then someone suggests something, but it's usually his words. Yeah,
oh, it'd be just a true experience to be in a fly on the wall and watch it happen. I think it'd be. Be amazing to be part of, and I can't wait to hear more of the album when that comes out. Did you have much time out after leaving Powderfinger and going into The Church? Because I know you were looking after some venues as well. I think it might have been Eaton's Hill, and
did
a bit of that.
Powderfinger stopped in 2010 sometime, and then there was that 3 years in there where I was sort of just running the studio here, started a little label for the studio. And then, yeah, I ended up working at that Eaton's Hill Hotel, trying to book bands into there. It just wasn't really it was the wrong hat to be wearing for me. It wasn't a good fit, me trying to do that. It's not, I was out of my comfort zone totally.
Well, it's a complete opposite of what you're normally used to, you know.
Yeah, and I sort of had grand ideas that I could get all these great bands to play in this sort of suburban pub, but it's it was a hard sell because it's kind of in the middle of nowhere. It's a great room, but it's no public transport, and you know getting people aren't aware of the anyone except for Barnsley, frankly, when a lot of the times in those sort of areas. And so it's hard.
Whereas sort of, inner city, just like, JC's venue or whatever, it's, you can get a bit more sort of, credible artists that aren't Barnsley or Midnight Oil. So,
yeah, exactly. And there's nothing wrong with Barnsley or Midnight Oil. That's what I'm saying. It's just that they're the sort of audience, that's the sort of bands that a lot of the people that live in those areas want to see.
Yeah, yeah. You've come through a couple of the worst years for the music industry and for venues particularly, and you've sort of observed it, and your mates around you probably had that running their own venues. Is it going to get better? Can you see improvements now happening after COVID and after bushfires and floods?
I mean, it's definitely better than it was last year.
Yeah.
I don't know how long it's going to take for people to be confident to buy tickets like they were before COVID, because everyone's had, things. They've held on to tickets, thankfully, but things have cancelled two or three times, and it's hard to get people to be willing to get rid of the cash for something that's 6 months ahead when they don't really know what's going on. So it's hard for venues, because I think a lot of people want to go out, but they're sort of doing it at the last minute, turning up on the night sort of thing rather than pre-purchasing.
And promoters need that lead time, to put the money away and then start booking other ones off the back of it. And
no doubt.
I think people also are out of practice. I think, in the last 2 years, a lot of people have forgotten how to go out. And
I think you're right. And there's literally 20-year-olds that had never been to a venue because, especially down in Victoria and places like that, where there's 2 years of lockdown. And so, people had turned 18 and had still never been able to go out and see a band in a licensed venue. So, it's been tricky for everyone.
Okay, so I went to a 21st. We were watching how by 11:30 or, no, not even that, 10:30, 11, they're all going, going to go home. And we were like, what is the go? All the kids have just sort of lost the art of having a big night out.
I know. Probably better for everyone's health, really, right?
It probably is. It probably actually is. It's going to be a lot of risk for the people, the managers and the bands and whatever. The problem is too, you got to do the right thing. If one of you gets COVID, you got to shut down a couple of shows, try and reschedule and try and encourage people to hold onto their tickets, which is the hardest thing. But a lot of bands actually seem to be going into a bit of a bubble when they're on tour because they just don't want to risk it.
Yeah. Well, that's what we did when the church just went to America. We just went over and did part of that. It ended at the Cruel World, but we did 11 shows in 13 days, I think, just a quick bus tour around the sort of western states. And we had to have rules like there's no extra people onto the bus and no one back into the band room, and just to try and minimize the chances of someone on the bus getting sick, because if one of the touring party gets sick, then it's obviously probably not going to end well. I had nightmare visions of getting sick myself, and then the band saying, "Man, you got to get off and stay in this Motel 6 in the middle of nowhere to quarantine for a couple of weeks. It'd be hell.
It'd be awful. I've had two nights in the Motel 6 and never again. But that's the risk you take. So so gone are the days of having drinks backstage post show, mixing with the other bands. You just got to go. Well, we want to get through the tour.
Well, that Cruel World, it was on for all. And by that stage, we were like, well, if we get sick, we get sick. And so there was, everyone was hanging around having drinks. I was having drinks with Johnny Rotten. That was pretty funny. But, it's sort of somewhere, some places over there, you wouldn't even know that there's been a pandemic.
Yeah.
Unless you're in an Uber and you've got to wear a mask in an Uber. It was all pretty just back to normal.
Just back to normal. What would you say to Johnny Rotten, by the way? Because you obviously, you go back to a moment where you're a little bit starstruck talking to someone who you idolise. What do you say to him to break the ice?
Oh, it was pretty funny. Because I think that with people like that, they're so used to people coming up and adoring them and getting a signature or a photo. They actually like it when people are a bit of a smart ass to them. So I can't remember exactly what I said, but it was something along – he was sitting there sipping on some kind of – straight spirits And so I took up another bottle of pirate alcohol, and we were sipping pirate drinks straight out of the bottle, sort of thing. It was funny. Like he's a good guy. He was nice. But yeah, you can see when, you know, he was running out of patience, but certain people would just come up and stick their face next to his and take a selfie without asking.
Mm.
And he's like, all right, fuck off. You know, you've had your fun. That's enough. And I don't know. We're just talking rubbish, really.
Yeah. Oh, you can see when they're starting to sort of get tired or check out of a conversation. You sort of go, okay, I'll let you be or whatever. But have you seen the Sex Pistols sort of? It's not a documentary; it's more of a drama.
Yeah, the biopic thing. I watched that. It was pretty good. I certainly didn't talk to him about that because I know that he's not into it.
Yeah,
I think it was sort of through. As far as I know, it was based on a book that Steve Jones had written. Mm. And so it's a perspective of what happened. I enjoyed it. It was entertaining. I thought the casting was pretty good and it was, you know, a glimpse into what it might have been like.
Yeah, I started sort of, you know, going onto Google and going, I didn't realize they crossed paths with this person and that person and you know, Chrissy, I should have known that, but I didn't even know that she was in those circles too, and yeah, it was
really, yeah.
Is there a Powderfinger one coming? Can we get one off the ground?
Oh, I don't know. Let's hope not. Who would be cast as us? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly right. Was there an empty sort of feeling after the band gave it up? Because it sort of felt almost premature to us on the outside, but maybe on the inside it was a long time coming.
Well, there definitely was an empty feeling because it's a really, you know, it becomes part of your identity after, I don't know, how long did we do that for? We did from sort of, you know, definitely over 20 years we were together. And I don't know, it'd be sort of, it's like how many people stay in their same job for 20 years? It's like not that many, really.
Not many.
So it was time to try something different. And I was kind of the last one to come on board. I was resistant. I was like, let's just have a break and, you know, see if we wanted to reform. But it was actually, it felt good to draw the line in the sand and for it to be over. And yeah, it took a while to sort of, you know, detach from the, well, we had become responsible for so many other people's lives as well.
Right.
Like there was such a machine involved with it, whether it was management or crew or whatever, you sort of feel kind of responsible to, you know, that's how they were making a living, was by going on tour with us. So yeah, it was weird. It was definitely weird, but it was, I don't know, it took a while. I remember Jim Magini from Midnight Oil actually rang me up and said, if you ever need to talk about what the feeling of detachment or whatever, because at that point they hadn't been playing. And I thought, oh, that's bizarre that he would say that. And then I sort of understood afterwards where he was coming from. So yeah.
Oh, completely. And everyone sort of forgets that it is a major part of your life. It is your career. And you've had so many life moments along the way, you know, like just being teenagers, meeting, you know, in a band in high school and, you know, getting married and having kids and all that sort of stuff.
You're sort of married to those people.
Yeah.
You actually see those people, the people in the band, more than you see your own families. And so, yeah, it's just... It's like it's not glamorous, but it's certainly nothing to complain about. The touring life or being in a band is good fun. I mean, we're just lucky, really, that we didn't have to put up with like intense paparazzi scrutiny or anything like that. That you might if you lived in even Sydney. Actually, Brisbane was pretty under the radar, and we were pretty uninteresting people. I think, like, we weren't. You know, when we weren't married to, you know, actors or supermodels or any other. It just wasn't. It wasn't really People magazine fodder or whatever. So we're pretty lucky.
Yes, that's one advantage of being in Brisbane. You're right. It's just that extra step, sort of out of the circles. And Sydney's crazy. I mean, you can see why, you know, INXS found it so hard towards the end.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Definitely.
And have you been down to Bernard's studio much in Byron Bay? Do you pop in or have you?
Yeah. I've done a bit of work down there with him over the years, and I see him every time I go to Byron.
Yeah.
And we chat on the phone. He's in Spain at the moment, but it's you know, we'll always be mates. So everyone that's in the band, we always, and I play in this other band with JC, and, you know, everyone sort of has varying degrees of contact with each other.
Yeah, the same as siblings. I mean, you know, I only talk to my brother every few weeks, and that's just normal. That's how it is, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, you were a major part of the music sort of scene, and that last tour as well was special. So you know, I think it was so appropriate when you joined the church. You know, when that came out, sort of a few years later, I was like, wow, that's actually such a cool opportunity.
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, I get to do what I want in a band. I think it'd be totally different if someone was, you know, if you were really under the whip and someone was telling you exactly how to play things, but none of those guys were ever like that. It was always pretty loose. So, I wasn't trying to replace Marty who'd left. I was just doing my own thing. And there's certain parts I had to play, obviously, otherwise there'd be a riot in the crowd. And you mentioned Blondie before. I just saw Blondie at this thing, and I found it really difficult to watch because the songs were so different than the originals, the way that they were being done. It was just odd. They had two like heavy metal shredding guitarists shredding over Heart of Glass, and it just didn't make sense.
No. And that's the thing. I mean, you got to know your role, and you don't want to, if you're a certain guitarist, you got to know your place.
Well, I think I'd say that she asked them to do that. It's just weird.
Yeah.
I want no part of it.
God, no. So won't be a powder finger covers band down the track. Just, you know, did you ever think about doing a solo album? It would have been songs left over, I guess, from your powder finger days, and there would have been things in a folder, and you would have gone, okay.
Oh yeah, I've got heaps of voice memos, as every musician does, which lots of unfinished things. But doing the Predators thing was, you know, sort of got a bit of that. I don't know, those frustrations out.
Yeah.
I guess. But one day I'll do a solo record. But it's, I don't know, I'm not really comfortable being responsible for everything myself. I think I like working with other people, and I like if there's a drummer in the, obviously I'm not a very good drummer, so I'd have to have a drummer, and I don't really want to tell them what to play. I want them to come up with their own ideas, and so it sort of feels like a more of a group effort.
Yeah, it's a lot easier when, you know, you can be, if Bernard did it on his own without a drummer, you know, just guitar only, that's about as easy as it gets. You don't need to sort of line up everything. Just bring the guitar and plug it in.
And being the singer already, I think that's half of the battle for him.
Yeah, but, exactly right.
Yeah.
I remember walking.
One day, never say never. I'll probably, next year.
Just put off the next year. We must have been so hard through the pandemic because your job is the tour. And like I said before about the Powderfinger side of it, you do feel responsible for your crew. And at least if you're in a band, you can sort of rely on your royalties a little bit. But the crew, they rely on you. And it must have been a tough time to sort of, you would feel responsible.
Yeah, well, I guess with the church crew, it wasn't such an issue because those guys all toured with different people. I mean, the Australian touring cycle is so short for them, for the church. It's like, you know, we're not really doing lots of regional areas and everything. But I'd like to. But, it was just a weird couple of years. You know, everyone had their own battles. I personally, my now wife was locked out of the country for 2 years, which was very shit.
Yeah.
So, you know, she'd been here and then went home, and I was meant to be going over there 3 weeks later, and then they shut the borders and we couldn't see each other for 651 days, not that I was counting.
I vaguely remember seeing it on your Facebook at the time. Yeah, I think you finally got to go over and you were saying, wow, it's been 2 years.
She got to come here eventually. But it's like, you know, it's just really frustrating when the bureaucracy get to determine whether or not your relationship is a true and lasting relationship, which essentially is what you've got to prove to them. And it's like, well, it is. We're engaged and, you know, we want to be together. So, yeah, it's frustrating.
Yeah, because they were letting sort of, you know, people come home. But even then, that was a real struggle. But then
that was hard for people. Then they were letting sports people and movie stars in easily. But there was people who hadn't seen their kids for 18 months, you know, that had been born and they'd never seen them. So, yeah.
Well, I'm glad we're on the other side of that.
Exactly.
And so the podcast is called The Rider. And I can imagine The Rider has changed many times over the years for you. Powderfinger starting off would have been probably pretty basic, probably a few beers and whatever. And then Powderfinger at its peak would have been something else. How has it changed from different stages of Powderfinger through to the church?
Well, I think The Rider for pretty much every Australian band for a long time was just a case of VB.
Yeah.
And that, you know, in retrospect, that's generous. Now a lot of bands get like two drink tickets each or whatever, and they get two drinks at the bar or whatever. But so it was that for a long time. And then, you know, we were never too kind of, you know, there was no sort of M&Ms with the green ones removed requests.
We love hearing those stories though, even though they weren't really exaggerated, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, we, you know, it was pretty standard, just a couple of bottles of wine, beers and a bottle of spirits, whatever we felt like. It was normally gin or something like that. And we just, and then if you need more, you ask for more and whatever. But it was, you know, you don't want to be smashed before you play a gig. It's sort of afterwards you have a couple of drinks.
Yeah. Yeah. And there were only certain bands who seemed to be able to get smashed before going out. UMI were famous for it.
It only works half of the time too. I saw some questionable performances from them and others, you know, when they've all had a couple. And I think everyone in Powderfinger's probably, you know, we all had one or two shows where it's like, yeah, we shouldn't have had that last beer. But it wasn't a regular thing, that's for sure. And now the church is, it's all pretty civilized sort of rider over there as well. A couple of bottles of champagne and some beers.
That's all you need. I mean, there's often strategies. I think when bands sort of certainly start off and they start, you know, doing, you know, tour bus kind of tours, and it's a survival thing where some will put in like a pair of socks and a...
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know. That's handy, actually. The socks is always good. Yeah. Ben Shepherd, who used to play in Soundgarden, the bass player, apparently he used to tour with nothing except for just like a little toiletries bag with a toothbrush, and he would just get... Like all he ever wore was a white T-shirt and army pants, so he'd get fresh boxes and socks every day out off the rider, and then when the pants got dirty, you'd just get a new pair. It'd be great.
And Bon Scott really was the same. Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be great to travel with nothing.
One pair of jeans.
Yeah. Yeah, one pair of really tight jeans.
Yeah. They were tight, weren't they? Bloody hell.
Yeah, around the crotchal region. Yeah.
I did want to say that, you know, throughout the pandemic, that reunion for the stream, you know, One Night Lonely, was just so good. And it gave everyone such a massive lift. Was it a fairly spontaneous thing, or was there a lot of chat before you guys got together and did that separately?
We'd been talking a lot on the phone about something else that we'd been having to put together, the anniversary thing for Odyssey.
Yeah.
That was coming out. And I can't even remember who suggested that we should do something first, or just jokingly said we should, you know. But when we did it, when we first started suggesting it, really no one had done one. And then we seemed to be at the sort of the beginning of those sort of things. And then a lot of people ended up doing ones that were at varying levels of liveness sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But ours, we were all in a different spot, and so it was yeah, it's a technical sort of impossibility to actually do it live.
Mm.
But like it was live to the extent where I played everything through live along to John, who'd played everything through live, and then someone else played along to us playing live. So, yeah, it was the people that put it together for us did a really good job, who filmed it and everything.
Oh, you would have had no idea. I mean, obviously, we all knew it wasn't live because it's just impossible with delays and all that stuff. But recording it as live is it's pretty amazing how they can put it all together and it switched so perfectly, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it had a good vibe. That's even for us. I think we enjoyed watching it back because it sort of became something bigger than what it was when we did our individual parts. But
yeah,
I mean, the main complaint I got from friends was that it was too short. So that's always a good problem.
Of course, the re-release of all the leftover songs as well was a nice bonus from Powderfinger. There must be a lot of songs in the cupboard still that you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think we've sort of found most of the completed ones. There's hundreds of things that aren't finished that we'd have to actually do something to rather than just mix them.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. They'll probably stay in the vault.
Yeah, there's some things that just should never have been released. I remember, the Jeff Buckley album, which came out after he died. I think a lot of fans went, oh, you know what? I don't think that really needed to be released. And there was certainly, you know.
I don't think he would have wanted it to have been released. I remember that. It was all four-track demos. I mean, that being said, it's pretty incredible to see how good his singing was just on his demos.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's the thing. He had that incredible voice and makes you wonder, you know, where he'd be now. What do you listen to when you're about to go in and say record with the church? Like, are there any sort of go-to artists you pop on and just to, you know, loosen up?
No, I think when you go into the studio to work on the church record, you're just thinking about the church. Yeah. You're not really listening to other bands particularly.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I listen to anything that's good. I'm not really genre specific. It's just whatever I like. I like some of pretty much every style, except for maybe I'm not a big fan of opera.
That's all right. That's good. We don't want an opera album from you. That's fine. Bluegrass maybe, but...
I can dig some bluegrass. It's great. But, and I find it... I like a lot of metal, but, there's some sort of Cookie Monster vocal stuff doesn't really appeal to me. I like a bit more melody in my vocal.
Some of the stuff off your early Powderfinger, like Parables was pretty heavy. I mean, that was, you know, I remember...
It's pretty heavy, but it's usually pretty melodic as well. The problem with Parables was that every song probably had 7 ideas in it when we could have just had 2 ideas and made it a bit more concise.
Because, yeah, whenever I sort of asked different members of the band, they always said that was the worst one. I was like, oh, I kind of liked it, you know, but I guess...
No,
when...
I like it. I've got a soft spot for that record. It's just a little bit... difficult for difficult sake. Like we were trying to sort of amuse ourselves with technicalities.
Yeah, and that comes with experience and, you know, you were just bloody young, you know.
Yeah, pretty young.
Well, best of luck for, you know, the album, which is about to come out. You got the tour, so that's all sort of coming up.
In September.
In September, which is, it's always exciting. It's quite a short tour, but that's what you can do at this stage as a band. You can just do, you know, little bursts here and there without the grueling long tour.
Yeah, as I said, I mean, we want to try and do regionals and stuff, but it's just hard to make these things affordable. It's not even about making money. It's just about not losing money. Mm. And so we're going to Perth. But we're not going to Tassie or Darwin, you know. So it's a bummer. You don't get to go to everywhere on these sort of things.
Yeah.
Not even going to North Queensland this time, which is a bummer. But, we'll sort of hopefully it'll go well. We're going to have 2 drummers on stage this time.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
So it's going to be a big setup and we could, you know, we'll do some new material and then obviously all of the songs that people kind of expect, or some of them, and then some older deep cuts that we haven't done for a while. So it's we're going to be doing a lengthy rehearsal before it, which is nice. We're able to do that. So
well, okay. So before you go, top 3 favorite church songs since joining. Can you do that?
I really like When You Are Mine. It's a favorite of mine. I really love Reptile. I really like a song called Lay Low.
Are there any songs that the band tend to stay away from? I mean, the big ones you have to play, obviously, but.
Well, Steve.
Yeah.
Steve is such a, you know, he's written 1,000 songs.
Yeah.
Like literally, he's got nearly as many songs as Slim Dusty. But he is always reticent to play the more popular songs. He likes to challenge himself and the audience.
I thought he'd be like that. I knew it.
And, you know, he's come to peace with playing like Milky Way and stuff, which because he realizes that he has to, but they hadn't played Unguarded Moment for a long time before I joined, and I love that song. That was probably the first song of theirs that I heard when I was little. So yeah, I've managed to get him to get them all to play that a few times. It pops up a lot now. We know how to play that one. So yeah.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yeah, it's a toughest thing for being an artiste is like, you know, some just hate the songs that are the biggest ones. It's just, you know, it just comes with the territory.
I think, Radiohead with Creep or whatever. So they go through years without playing it and then they come to peace with it and realize that, you know, it's a pretty good song. We might as well do it. It's only 3.5 minutes of our life.
Exactly right. Exactly
right.
It
makes people happy. Let's do it.
Well, mate, it's so good to catch up with you. It's been a long, long time. And, you know, thanks so much for your time and best of luck for the tour. And we will see you on the road soon.
Come along and have a beverage. Come and steal our rider.
Is that a challenge? I can't wait. Ian Hogg from Powderfinger and The Church, thanks for coming on The Rider. Make sure to check out The Church for their national tour. And next week on the podcast, another Aussie legend who's done it tough. I mean, he's been doing the hard yards when it comes to all the pubs, all the shows, big and small. We'll catch you next week, same time. This is The Rider with Becco.